Hi, this is Dr. David Stevens, your host on Christian Doctors Digest, and thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule so we could get together and talk about a couple practice issues. First is the one every healthcare professional dreads, and that's a malpractice lawsuit. And we're going to talk to Wendy Kang, who heads up CMDA's Medical Malpractice Ministry, giving us some insights on this issue and what to do if you or a friend or colleague is sued to cope with what's happening. And then we're going to join John Dunlop. John is a physician who deals a lot with the issue of dementia, and he's going to share on his new book, Finding Grace in the Face of Dementia, an excellent resource for not only healthcare professionals, but also for patients. Well, as we dig into these practice issues, we've got a great time in store. It's a pleasure to introduce to you Dr. Wendy Kang. She's a clinical professor of anesthesiology at the University of Texas Health Science Center at San Antonio. She's board certified in anesthesiology with additional certifications in pain medicine, and also does a lot of teaching for residents and medical students. She obtained her law degree from Southern Methodist University School of Law while practicing full-time as a physician. I go, wow, when I read that. She passed her Texas State Bar in 1993 and promptly put herself on inactive status as an attorney, preferring to, as she says, nurture the patient-physician relationship as influenced by law, medicine, and ethics, rather to engage in an adversarial legal system. It's great to have her on and talk about the medical malpractice ministry and this issue that we all dread. Wendy, I so appreciate what you're doing through the medical malpractice ministry here at CMDA, but I think a lot of our members may not have even heard of it or have forgotten that they heard about it. Tell us about what this ministry does.
This ministry is one of the great benefits of being a member of the Christian Medical Dental Association. There are four other wonderful physicians who are on this ministry. All of us have had personal experience in going through the traumatic process of being sued, of being alleged that our care of our patients were substandard. So we are able to understand what our callers are going through when the physicians and even non-physicians call the medical malpractice ministry and request to speak to a physician. One of us will be quickly notified and will contact this caller to stand by them, to give them support during this traumatic experience. I will say that initially when people call, they are frantic, understandably. But they're frantic because their world has suddenly been turned upside down.
I know back in, you know, when I was trained, the bad physicians got sued, and then a lot of physicians get sued, and now it's just about everybody gets sued. And it's devastating, I think, especially for Christian physicians, because we're in this for the right reason and wanting to be in ministry as well as providing excellent medical care. And so it hurts our self-concept. What happens once that call's made back, Wendy? What kind of things do you do to help a physician or a dentist or any healthcare professional that's going through this?
So what happens after they call is that our staff liaison, Tanya, will either send me an email and we'll ask about what sort of assignment to one of our malpractice ministry physicians. The information is passed along, and that physician will take up the trail of either the email contact or a telephone contact. It's whatever the caller has left us, the information. We are there to provide support. If you, the caller, don't want to give us any information about the specifics, that's all right. We are there simply to listen. Now, quite frequently, What happens is, I think that many times people get that initial summons and they're freaked out and they themselves don't know the specific facts. And I think what we do as people who have been experienced through this trial of tribulation, I think we're able to calm them down by trying to, through prayers, get them into a more peaceful state so that they can once again think as to what they would do normally. We physicians are scientists. We like to be in control. We like information. We like facts. Unfortunately, when we get that summons, all of that seems to go out the window. And so I think the medical malpractice ministry physicians will help to get the caller to realize it's not the end of the world, and to just understand that there is no need to self-flagellate. There is no need to cause any harm to oneself over things that have not even been substantiated. One of my main concerns as chair of this ministry is to make sure that our callers are immediately contacted as soon as possible, because I don't want these callers to hurt themselves.
And we send some resources as well, don't we? I mean, we don't give legal advice. Obviously, we're not lawyers, but I know that you all have resources that you send to help people understand what they're going through better, as well as the time of encouragement and prayer. I think one of the hardest things about malpractice suit is your lawyer. The first thing they say is, don't talk to anybody about this. And if you have ever needed support, that doesn't mean you have to talk about the case, but if you've ever needed support and encouragement and prayer, you need it when this happens, because it is assault on your identity as a healthcare professional. And everyone's heard horror stories about what's happened through suits, so there's a lot of apprehension.
Absolutely. The social support network is extremely important. And we physicians are told by attorneys, don't take it personally. It's just a lawsuit. It's just, you know, business. But we as physicians do equate our honor, both professionally, as being equal to our personal honor. And particularly as Christian physicians, we feel like we have let down God by not performing in the way that this plaintiff is trying to say, that we have not performed up to the correct standards. And so this is a time when reaching out to other people is extremely important. You're exactly right. We do not give out legal advice. However, we can certainly listen to the caller venting. We can provide just some general common sense guidelines, such as don't alter your medical records. This is not the time to do that. Maybe it's just the best time to pull out your Bible and read those passages that have given you great comfort in the past. You know, some people like Proverbs, some people like Psalms, the 23rd Psalm. I personally like the Philippians chapter 4, verses 6 about not being anxious.
Yeah, and remembering that God is still in control and He walks with us through these valleys that happen. I remember I wasn't accused of malpractice, but I remember a mistake I made in medical school, and I was just horrified. And I think I was a third-year student, and back in those days, they would never allow it. Now, I was asked to do a spinal tap on a guy, and I'd been up all night, and I went in and did it, went great, and walked out, and realized I hadn't prepped the patient. I hadn't used alcohol or anything. I can't explain what I did and why I did it, but, you know, and going and telling my chief resident what I had done and going back and telling the patient what I had done. And we put on some prophylactic antibiotics, though the risk was small. And, of course, he did fine. But, I mean, that was just a horrific moment in my medical career. I never did anything like that since. But, you know, and as a student, you even feel, I think, somewhat worse. So these things happen. And the other thing I was thinking about, Wendy, just a couple of weeks ago, I was called out to give a five-hour deposition to the Deputy Attorney General of the state of California over our suit over physician-assisted suicide and how they legalized it. I had never gave a deposition before, and so I got a little experience in that end of it, which is something that happens in the middle of a suit as well. So I've never been sued. We didn't have that problem in Africa, but it's definitely something that I've talked to a lot of our members about and is so common these days.
I think the biggest piece of advice for depositions for people who must undergo that process is take it seriously.
Yeah.
You want to prep for it. You do not want to take an arrogant attitude that you already know how to undergo depositions. It's a whole different ball of wax from being asked questions by your attending physician when you're a medical student or a resident. These lawyers frequently could have probably gone to medical schools themselves.
Yeah.
They're extremely adroit at getting answers out of you that maybe you really didn't want to say it the way they got it out of you. So it's important. Take your deposition seriously.
Yeah, I had a afternoon of practice before I went into this one with my lawyer, and it was a topic I was very familiar with. But and then the bottom line is, if you don't know, say you don't know, and if they and always tell the truth because they're going to check every fact, and don't hedge at all or think I think this or say something like you know it when you don't. It's very important. But those are all strategies. I think the key thing, though, that we're focusing on here is this is a spiritual assault on those that undergo it as Christians, and you need support. I think one of the things most members don't know, you know, our staff member that works with the medical malpractice ministry, if a case goes to trial, she tells us, doesn't tell us who the doctor is, but we're praying for the person that day or during their deposition, and we're having staff chapel. We're praying for this person whose name has not been mentioned as they go through this, that God will give them strength, give them wisdom, give them articulation, and give them peace in the midst of the storm. God can use even a malpractice suit to deepen our faith. It's those difficult times is when our faith grows.
Absolutely. I look upon this process as if we're walking through the valley of death.
Hmm.
It's the valley of dark shadows. It's a time of great depression. But if you realize that God carries us through those times of turbulence and tribulation, and that there are other Christians who are there supporting us as we're walking through this dark valley, that eventually we will pass through that period of great darkness and that we will emerge once again out into the sunshine. And you can spell that S-U-N-S-H-I-N-E, or you can spell it S-O-N-S-H-I-N-E.
Yeah.
But God is always there with us. We just have to remember that.
Wendy, what should people do if they're being sued or they have a colleague or a friend that may not even be a member of CMDA who loves Christ and needs support? We're happy to help. How do they get in contact with the medical malpractice ministry?
They can call us directly. They can contact us through the cmda.org website. There's also a telephone number there for the MMM, the ministry, where their information can be obtained, and then a physician from the ministry will contact them according to the caller's desire, whether it's through email or whether it's through telephone.
You know, malpractice is terrible, but you all also deal with other devastating moments that healthcare professionals may have to deal with. Share one of those.
One of the trends that I have noted is calls from particularly younger physicians who are employed physicians. They are not getting sued. However, they are in jeopardy of being terminated from their employment contract, from their work in a hospital or a large healthcare organization. Many times these younger physicians don't know what to do. it has the same emotional destructive impact as if they're undergoing a medical malpractice lawsuit. And I would like these physicians to understand is we are also willing to help them through this time of great tribulation for them. We want to be their trustworthy companions. We want them to understand that the Christian Medical Dental Association physicians also care about this particular event in their life. And again, we can't dispense legal advice, but we can certainly help them walk through this process to be mindful of the fact that, again, our great God is in control and that there are other Christians in the healthcare profession who care greatly about what they're going through.
Wendy, thank you for what you're doing, and we'll have actually a button on our app that where people can get more information and contact the office. Thank you for what you're doing and your colleagues. What a wonderful ministry this is, and we just want people to know it's available because we want to walk through that valley with people when they're experiencing it. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Well, as I mentioned, there is a button on our app that where you can get more information. Or if you want to go to the web on another computer, go to cmda.org/medical-malpractice-ministry. Or just put medical malpractice ministry in the search engine. Or give us a call here at 888-230-2637, and we can put you in touch with that ministry. Can you believe this? To me, it seems like 2018 has just flown by, and as such, we need to talk about ideas for our year-end planning for our taxes, my taxes, your taxes, and about charitable giving. So I asked Jeff Anderson, our CMD Director of Gift Planning, to join me.
Thanks very much, Dave. You know, my father taught, even warned me, you could say, that time speeds up once we age, and has he ever been right? 2018 is almost in the books, isn't it?
It is, and we're moving ahead quickly to the calendar year. What ideas and practices then can you share with our members and with me for our taxes and giving?
Dave, first of all, I think 2018 will be the first full tax year under the Jobs and Tax Cuts Act of 2017. So this could be something of, well, a new frontier, if you will, for our members. A quick recap might be in order. Let's recall marginal income tax rates for most of our members will be lower. The standard deduction was raised significantly, substantially for single and married filers. Certain deductions and exemptions are limited now or even eliminated, and with a net probable result that an estimated 90% of us as American taxpayers will not be itemizing our deductions for 2018 and the 2018 federal tax return.
So what can we do to put ourselves in the best position possible here at year end?
If our members haven't done this already, I'd strongly suggest that he or she sit down with the CPA or tax preparer and do it now. Run the numbers, develop an estimate for how the new tax laws will affect you and your family. From that, you should determine whether you should try to itemize deductions and whether you should even give more to church and charity this year, for example. If that's the case, you may wish to consider funding a donor advised fund. Now, Dave, we've discussed a donor advised fund on this TaxWise moment previously. A donor advised fund empowers our members to take a potential deduction this year, but you can continue to make charitable distributions from your donor advised fund for years to come.
One thing I thought about, Jeff, with a higher standard deduction, one option is take this donor advised fund and put 2 or 3 years of what you're going to plan to give in it able to take a deduction because you're above the level and then dispense that over 2 or 3 years to your charity. That's one way to grab a deduction you might not be able to grab otherwise.
Dave, that's an excellent idea and technique after the Tax Reform Act of 2017. If you wish to consider funding a donor-advised fund before December 31st, 2018, you'll be eligible for a potential income tax deduction for the amount that you put in the donor-advised fund. However, you can take 2, 3, 4, or more years to disperse what you funded the donor-advised fund. Dispersing those grants from your donor advised fund for years to come.
Well, and another thought is if you're still working and you have a higher income level, you can dump that in and then use some of that donor advised fund after you retire for your giving as well. So
that's right.
It's one way to shelter income in the long run from taxes and still do a lot of good with your giving.
Absolutely. Also, we have seen record gains in the major stock market indices this year. So I'd suggest, if I may, we probably ought to be visiting our brokers and investment advisors to see whether we should be giving appreciated stocks, avoiding the capital gains by doing so, and using appreciated stocks as a source of our charitable giving.
Jeff, you and I are not quite there yet, but many of our members who are 70 and a half or older are required to take a required minimum distribution from their IRAs. And for some of them, it's probably the first time. How can that impact their year-end planning?
Dave, I think there's really such a tremendous potential benefit with the require minimum distribution. And if you must take a require minimum distribution this year, please give strong consideration to using all or even a part of your require minimum distribution on or before December 31st as a direct charitable IRA rollover for your stewardship. Now, if we use our require minimum distribution in this manner, you won't have to pay federal income tax on that distribution from your IRA. You'll be supporting your favorite charitable causes, church, CMDA, other ministries. Dave, I think it's just really a tax-wise, smart, and easy move for many of our members with their IRAs and the required minimum distributions.
Yeah, especially if you're in a higher income bracket. I mean, you're saving a lot more than you would just from a standard deduction, or you may not even reach the standard deduction level.
That's exactly right.
And what about year-end credit card gifts and gifts of cash?
Dave, these are ones we need to pay attention to because they can trip us up if we're not careful. Now, this year, December 31st is a Monday, New Year's Eve. It's not an official holiday for the United States Postal Service, so we'll have that last day of the year to get any last-minute checks postmarked and mailed that day as 2018 charitable gifts for our church and other charitable organizations. Also, here's one we need to pay a particular attention to. If you're making a credit card gift, then consider doing that on a charity or church's website, as your credit card must actually be charged by the charity on or before December 31st, 2018. That way, the IRS will recognize it as a gift for tax year 2018. If you mail in a credit card gift and it reaches your charitable organization after the first of the new year in 2019, then you've made a 2019 year tax gift because your credit card wasn't charged in tax year 2018.
Wow, a lot of good information, Jeff. Thanks for these helpful year-end tips. How may our members contact you or our stewardship people here if they've got questions?
Please give us a toll-free call at 888-230-2637. May email me at jeff.anderson@cmda.org, or please check out our array of web resources at cmdagift.org.
Thanks so much, Jeff.
Thank you always, Dave.
It's a treat to have John Dunlap join me here at the CDD microphone. John and I both did our master's in bioethics at Trinity International University at the same time, so we got to know each other pretty well and have stayed in contact. He continues there as an adjunct faculty. Back it up, though. He's been a Christian since he was very young, graduated from Wheaton College, did his medical degree and postgraduate training at Johns Hopkins, then moved to the Chicago area where he practiced for 38 years and was credentialed in geriatrics and really focused more and more of his practice in that area. A few years ago, he retired, moved back east to be near his children and grandchildren. He's part-time practicing geriatrics and is on faculty at the Yale School of Medicine. John's written three books, Finishing Well to the Glory of God, Wellness for the Glory of God, and then this latest book that we're going to talk about today, Finding Grace in the Face of Dementia. John, you've got a new book out, and just finished reading it, and it is superb. Finding Grace in the Face of Dementia. What caused you to hit on this topic? I know you deal with geriatrics a lot and see patients with this disease, but is that the only reason?
You know, it's an issue that I've dealt with both professionally but personally as well, because both of my parents died at various stages of dementia, and really had to struggle with that. Questions like, what is God doing? What is his purpose? Is there any purpose? Is this just a great mistake that is part of a sinful world? And wrestling through some of those things, I realized that a lot of people also had those same questions. And for some, it was even a real obstacle to their ability to trust God.
Yeah, and I think you really capture that, because, I mean, we dealt with my father-in-law who lived with us for 7 years and went through to his death from his dementia, and, you know, read a number of books, but there I couldn't find anything like what you put together, really looking at both the theological as well as the very practical and the scientific and all the other issues. I loved your first chapter, God and Dementia. Why don't you comment on that? I mean, you really tried to answer those questions that you were having.
You know, I really would summarize it by saying God doesn't make mistakes.
Yeah.
And he takes the really awful things of this world and can turn them around to accomplish his glory. And he certainly did that with our sin. But I think he also does it in the context of dementia.
You know, seeing the dignity of people when their mental capacity is decreasing and other issues are coming along, I think is so important, especially for caregivers. And I thought that was a wonderful thrust in your book and helping them to understand their role in providing care if that's what they're doing.
Yeah, you know, all of us, I think probably just more than anybody else almost, we docs just have such a inadequate concept of where dignity really lies. I mean, we look at our intelligence, we look at our ability to do things, and we think, well, boy, we're pretty important. We're dignified people. But, you know, God doesn't look at us that way. God sees our dignity because we're made in God's image, and for believers, we're redeemed by Christ. And those are the things which allow us to have dignity in God's eyes.
You know, one of the things, John, I really liked about the book is that it touched all sorts of segments, all different parts maybe of the equation of dementia. And when you got into those chapters talking about what do we know about dementia, what about diagnosing dementia, what about telling the family about their dementia or the patient, there was so much practical advice, not only for the patient and their family, but for the caregiver, for the doctor dealing with this. I especially liked what you did with, you know, when should you share this diagnosis and how do you share it and when is the appropriate time to do it and in what way? You may want to comment on that a little bit, because this is a really tough diagnosis, in some ways as bad as a cancer diagnosis, or even worse for people.
Yeah, I think studies show people fear dementia just as much as they fear cancer. So I think that the challenge of diagnosis is not how do you make it. That's often pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
The challenge is when do you make it and what impact is it going to have? And I have found over the years that usually when dementia is starting, families begin to get frustrated, they get irritated with the patient, and they need to know that this is a disease. It's not just the irascibility of their father or their mother, and they need some concept that this is a disease that's working. On the other hand, patients can respond positively or they can respond negatively. And it's a real challenge to evaluate how the patient is going to respond to the diagnosis. But I've certainly seen some who, once they realize this is a disease, they don't feel guilty, they feel better about themselves and can pick up and make the best of it. But I've seen other people just totally devastated knowing that they have dementia. And they lose all hope, they lose all ability to keep moving forward, and they give up. And I think we need to, as much as we can, seek God's wisdom for when we share the diagnosis with the patient, and getting some idea when it's going to be helpful and when it's going to be harmful before we do it.
Yeah, I appreciated how you kind of teased out, you know, sometimes you need to be saying they have memory problems, and find that appropriate point to say that it's dementia, and that's tough, and that's knowing your patients. And unfortunately, it's more challenging this day and time because we have less time with patients to know them as well as we want to, and yet that's where the real ministry takes place. Talk a little bit. You not only have a lot of great stuff in here for healthcare professionals, but especially for patients and their families, and supporting the caregivers is such a huge part of this, because I guess the majority of people still are being taken care of in their families' homes.
Yeah, but 75% of people with dementia are cared for at home. And there's 7 million people in this country with dementia, so there's a lot of caregivers. And they really are the second victims of this tragic disease.
How do you support them through the long, I mean, you know, be it up to 20 years, though the average is 7 that before people die with this, but that's a long grind for a family. How can healthcare professionals in particular help support the caregivers?
Yeah, I think the first thing to do is very early in the disease, encourage them to learn as much as they can about dementia. Go to the Alzheimer's Association, go to some of the meetings, go to some of the lectures that are offered through the Alzheimer's Association. By the way, Alzheimer's Association, though it's named Alzheimer's, really deals with all kinds of dementia. And learn as much as they can and pull together the family, the interested parties, and talk about how you're going to help each other through this process, because caregiving should not just fall on one person, though the primary caregiver has to be one person, otherwise it's so confusing to the patient. And then begin to think early about when and how you're going to get practical help before you just get to the total wit's end and start hating what you're doing.
I thought the other thing, you've got a couple of wonderful chapters in there about what should the church do and giving them practical advice, because, you know, we're quick to come when somebody's seriously ill, visit in the hospital, bring food over the house. But there's so much the church needs to do to help in these long-term situations where it's not just an acute thing.
Yeah, that is so true. And I think that has to start way early. I mean, the church needs to be helping Christians learn how to go through difficult times with faith and trust in God, because so often churches tend to be very celebratory. We love to think in positive ways, but we need to be equipping the saints to what I term suffer productively.
Yeah, and I think even in larger churches, even having, you know, support groups based at the church of people going through this and somebody leading that that can help. The thing I loved about the book, John, is there's just very practical suggestions, list of them for families, for churches, for helping the person who realizes they have dementia, and as well as just a very strong spiritual component to the whole book. And I don't know of anything out there like this that I've seen. It's just a marvelous job. What do you hope this is going to do? I know it was a labor of love, but as you look at what's going on in our country and the increasing levels, it seems, of dementia, almost 50% will have it by age 90, which is a lot of us. What was your intent when you got this book down on paper that the effect would be?
You know, in the biggest picture, that God could be glorified, that we recognize that He is still in control, He still has purposes, and He is doing things for good. But in a very practical way, I really wanted people early in the stage of dementia to have some reassurance that that this was going to be okay.
Yeah.
And then helping caregivers know what to do and when to do it. And then I also, just in my geriatrics training, I am really big on advanced directives and helping people to make wise advanced directives that indicate what type of medical care they want as life goes on. And I think it's so important in the context of dementia that people who are experiencing it indicate to their families early in the course how they want to be treated.
Yeah, I like the fact at the end, listeners would be interested to know, you have a letter to your family about your desires when you get dementia or if you get dementia. And that's at the conclusion of the book. It's a great example of doing that well.
I think those things really need to be carefully thought through and executed, yeah.
Yeah. John, thank you for this labor of love. You've put a wonderful tool into our hands to help our patients, help their families, help the church, help us as we take care. These patients can be frustrating for the healthcare professional as well. As you know, you've had those challenges, and yet they can make such a difference that we can in healthcare in helping people make sense of this and help them practically in dealing with the issues they're going to face. So, John, thanks for what you've done. I'm just praying this book's going to be in the hands of every one of our members and through them to their patients, because I think it's going to make a really big difference on this disease.
Well, thank you, David.
That was a great interview, and I think this book is going to be a classic on a difficult topic that all of us deal with personally and on many of us in practice. If you'd like to get a copy, just give us a buzz here at CMDA, 888-230-2637. Also, you can go online, cmda.org, and order it very quickly with a credit card. I think this will be a book you not only enjoy reading and learn a lot from, but one that you'll be passing on to others. Well, we've got some great events coming up that you don't want to miss. It's not too late to register for the Global Missions Healthcare Conference, which is November 8th through the 10th. And that is the largest medical mission conference in the world, with over 200 exhibitors, 130 workshops. Around 3,000 people will gather. About 1,200 of those will be students and residents. So if you're a student, grab some friends, jump in a car and come. They'll put you up in free housing in someone's home, and you will remember this conference for your whole life. I remember when I went to Urbana in college, and I've never forgotten that experience. It had a great impact on my walk with the Lord and my ultimately ending up on the mission field. And if you're a graduate, come on down as well. It's a wonderful experience. If you want to register, just go to medicalmissions.com, medicalmissions.com, and you can register for that conference. Hope to see you there. CMDA is going to have 12 exhibits at that conference, so a lot of staff will be there. It'll be fun to get together. And then March 28th through the 30th, 2019, hard to believe we're getting into that year, it's the Remedy Medical Mission Conference, which will be held at the First Baptist Orlando Church. I want you to put that down on your calendar, especially if you're in the Southeast. If you're a graduate, come. Bring some students, bring some residents, load up your car. It'll be a wonderful time on focusing on what the Lord is doing around the world and how people can be involved. We got some great speakers lined up. And then May 2nd through the 5th is the CMDA National Convention in Ridgecrest, North Carolina. Beautiful time of year. Always love being down there as the leaves are getting green and spring is there. It's just beautiful. This is going to be a special convention. The theme is Transform, Celebrating God's Faithfulness. And that'll be my last convention as the CEO of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. Mike Chupp will be taking over a few months after that. So it's going to be a special one of inaugurating Mike and a farewell to me and just a great time. A lot of folks are going to be there. You're likely to see many old friends if you've been in CMDA for a while. And if not, come and experience it as someone new, because loads of workshops, great speakers, and we're going to have a wonderful time of fellowship and growing in the Lord. Hope to see you there. You know, one of the things I hear frequently is I talk to people about one of our ministries, they'll comment, "Oh, I didn't know you guys did that." And some of you that know a lot about us may not know where things are these days. So I thought as we closed, I'd just update you on one of our key result areas, which is transformation. Of course, that includes all our student and graduate ministry. It's our largest section of staffing for CMDA. I think we have over 80 staff now working in that area. You'd be happy to know that we're now on 302 campuses across the United States. That's hard to believe. I remember I was going back looking at something, and we were down around maybe 150 when I first came on, maybe a few fewer than that. But how God has blessed and expanded, and of course now we're on some college campuses with pre-professional campus groups. We're working on some optometry campuses, physical therapy campuses, and others, as well as medical and dental schools across the country. But as the medicine has grown, we have grown, and I think now about 93% of the campuses in the United States, CMDA groups are meeting. We estimate there's about 15,000 students at our meetings each week. So God's giving a tremendous impact. And then we're not only moving into new areas, we are deepening areas with increased staffing. We know when we get a staff member, even a part-time person working in a community with students and grads, the ministry just explodes. Down in San Antonio, where we first did this, there's over 200 that attend the weekly meetings, monthly mission trips, that type of thing. And so some great things happening. One of the new places is in Houston, and in fact, we had staff down there just recently and putting a full-time staff member there in January. So God's doing good things, increasing the number of CMDA graduate chapters, ministry groups, as we call them. And if you have an interest in getting docs together in your local area or other healthcare professionals, give us a buzz. We'd be happy to give you resources and things that'll help you do that. And we have recorded material that you can use for a meeting to inspire you for 20, 25 minutes and then have discussion questions, all sorts of things that can help you get together, support each other, encourage each other. I know you're busy, but you're so busy you need this. That's the way things work. I was thinking just this past weekend, we had our Women Physicians for Christ National Meeting up in Vermont, and I haven't heard the final numbers, but I think it was over 200 women physicians at that meeting and other women healthcare professionals. And God is using that ministry in such a powerful way as we have more and more women in healthcare. And that's a great blessing, and we want to help meet their needs. Side by Side, a great group that falls under our transformation key result area. And this is a ministry of healthcare spouses to younger spouses. On the women's side, those difficult years, especially during medical school and residency, when often a wife will be home with the children, they're having children, it's a difficult time, they need a lot of support. And this side-by-side ministry just continues to expand, not only in this country, but around the world. There are now, I think, 82 chapters, including ones in Cameroon and one in Japan and a third one that was coming on board. I can't even remember where that was. But what a great ministry, and so biblical, the older women teaching and mentoring the younger women. And women that get involved in this just get really excited about it. And often it happens to them during their husband's training. And then when they go out, they want to be involved in starting this where they are. So it's really catching fire all around the world. So lots of things happening in the whole area of transformation, and I won't go through the whole list, but those are just three of the highlights. And I encourage you to pray and get involved, especially if you're a student on campus, and especially if you're a grad near a student chapter. The thing students want more than anything is to have time with you. Not any formal teaching, just you just letting them tag along and watch you as you practice and you minister, or having them into your home, and it can be powerful. You don't have to be fancy. You can go to Sam's and buy everything pre-cooked, invite some students over for a meal on Saturday night or whatever. And I know it'll be a blessing to you, and it'll be a blessing to them. Well, God continues to bless CMDA, and we need to give him the glory. I tell you, when I look at our 45 ministries and how they've expanded and grown in the years, I just can't help but praise the Lord. This is his work. This is what he is accomplishing, and we need to give him praise for it. Until we get a chance to get together again, may God bless you richly.
Christian Doctors Digest is a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on Christian Doctors Digest are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on Christian Doctors Digest reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members, and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.